so excited to have my first article, first of many articles, published in Law Enforcement Today. Law Enforcement Today is one of the largest publications out there for LEOs and criminal justice professionals. If you go to lawenforcementtoday.com, you're going to see all kinds of great articles. And if you search mindset, you're going to see my article pop up. And the title of it is, Does Your Mindset Need a Reset? Maybe it does. We talk all the time about the importance of mindset. As a matter of fact, my next guest, you're going to love her. She's going to talk about mindset. And it's going to be linked up in the show notes, folks. On to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Patrick here, host and creator of this great and growing show. Growing because of you folks, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning in. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, maybe you're a road deputy, maybe you're a patrol officer. Hey, maybe you're working in corrections. Hey, a big shout out to all those brave men and women working in the jails and prisons all over this great country. I could not do what you're doing. It's an amazing job. It's a special type of person to work in corrections. A big shout out to you. And if you're a new listener to the show, welcome. Longtime listener, welcome back. Folks, you know I am a huge fan of coffee, and I'm telling you, you will love the products from Four Sigmatic. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to this great coffee company, and best of all, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, sometimes we all need a change in scenery. Sometimes we need coaching and the right people to mentor us to get us to that next level that we want to achieve. My friends at Frame of Mind Coaching can help you do that. Kim Ades is a wonderful woman. She's been on the show a couple times before. We've got to get her back. But if you head over to the cjevolution.com website, you're going to be able to take a free assessment, see what Kim Ades and her wonderful crew at Frame of Mind Coaching can do for you. On to the show. Val Van Brocklin is on the show. And if you don't know who she is, for over 30 years, she has been winning hearts, inspiring action, and helping people find greater meaning in the work they do. She got here through a unique combination of skills, education, and the in-the-trenches experience, all fueled by her own passion for people who have chosen to serve others. She's a former state and federal prosecutor, and her work was featured on ABC's Primetime Live, the Discovery Channel's Justice Files, and in the USA Today, the National Enquirer, and Red Book. I hope you enjoy Val Van Brocklin. Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Val Van Brocklin on the show. Val, are you there?
I am, Patrick. Hello to you, and hello to all your listeners.
Well, thank you for being here. I know you're busy, but you're down in Arizona right now where it's warm, right?
I am.
And you have done so much in public service. You were a prosecutor for many years. You're still giving back to the law enforcement community. You go out there and you travel everywhere and you teach and you're providing training. What made you get into public service, Val?
Well, I will tell you that, but I do have to make a shout out for my home state. I'm currently wintering in Alaska, but my husband and I are residents of – I'm wintering in Arizona, but we're residents of Alaska, and that's still my home state, the last frontier. And I don't even feel guilty or a weenie baby for spending winters down in Arizona, because we spent many in Alaska, and I'm from upstate, but – I had to give that shout out to the last frontier, because that's
big shout out to Alaska. And I think you've done your time probably with shoveling snow.
I have. But your question about how I got into public service, I'm on, I guess, right now my fourth career. I was an undergraduate. I was a teacher, and I worked for 5 years in special ed. And decided to go to law school with the idea of, when I got out, advocating for the rights of disabled people. But when I got out, the economy was in a recession then, not this most recent one, one back in the 80s. And social service money was being cut, and I needed a job. And the one other thing that I liked in law school was trials. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that probably 95% of civil litigation cases and in settlement. So that meant criminal. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought in the beginning that I would like to be a public defender, but my mind got changed by the Anchorage district attorney.
So you got into the prosecuting side.
That's right. I interviewed with him and I interviewed with the public defender in Anchorage, Alaska, because I wanted to be in the last frontier. I went to school on the East Coast, mm-hmm. but I love the outdoors and wilderness, and I wanted to be in Alaska, so I interviewed with the public defender and the DA and told the DA if I get offered a job to be a public defender, I think I'd rather do that. And he said, why? Mm-hmm. And I said, because I'm really worried about the power of the government as exercised against poor, disenfranchised people. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, well, then why don't you come and work where that power is exercised? Hmm. And that was that made a lot of sense to me. And it didn't take long working as a state prosecutor. And then I went on to become a federal prosecutor. But it didn't take long working with law enforcement and with victims and their families to realize that I had lucked into the most meaningful thing that had ever happened in my life. Mm-hmm. So that became a career for a while.
Yeah. And what were some of the hardest cases as a prosecutor? I mean, I'm sure they were all probably difficult in their own different ways, but what were some of the hardest cases that you worked on, Val?
Well, when you say hard or difficult, Patrick, do you mean intellectually or emotionally?
No, I should have clarified that, and I apologize. Emotionally, I mean.
Oh, that's easy. Child abuse.
Yeah, because I was going to say, as a police officer of many years, some of the hardest cases, and I know this is, and you just validated it with the prosecuting lens on, there were kid cases, you know, and child
Absolutely.
Molestation cases were just horrible.
Both sexual abuse and physical abuse, and I specialized in that kind of prosecution for a number of years, and one of my earliest training topics while I was still a prosecutor, I would travel and train on was how to successfully investigate and prosecute child abuse cases. But I can remember going into the boss, the DA, every so often and saying, please, I need a break. Can you just give me an adult homicide, something, you know? because as you recognize, when you're dealing with vulnerable, whether it's kids or the elderly, vulnerable, particularly vulnerable people, those are certainly the most physically demanding, not just for the prosecutors, even more so for you folks on the front line, because you wade into the storm and you're seeing it direct and firsthand.
Well, and the thing that always amazed me is that, I mean, it never really, I mean, there was always a more shocking case, Val, and you saw this on your end too, is just when you thought you saw, at least in my perspective, in my opinion, my experience, just when I saw it all, I saw something more just ridiculous in a bigger atrocity than the last one.
They can, yeah. When I'm listening, and of course, my mind is flashing back onto onto photos. Mm-hmm. My mind is flashing back onto interviews with kids when they're describing. And I don't need to get graphic because you men and women of the shield and the badge, you confront it firsthand. You're mm-hmm. there taking the photos. You're there taking the video. I'm seeing it. And and just when you think, but you know, in order to work those kind of cases, you develop, you know, a pretty morbid sense of humor, but you also, you harden up. I can remember hearing myself one time say to officer, a child sexual exploitation unit investigator who brought me a case, and he's giving me the thumbnail sketch, and I said, oh, good, multiple victims. Mm-hmm. And I heard that come out of my mouth, And I was appalled and horrified at what I'd said. And yet he understood exactly what I meant. Mm-hmm. It's not good that there were multiple victims of the perpetrator, but good because it's not one kid's word against the abuser with no medical evidence, which mm-hmm. can be very tough cases. With multiple victims, I'm much more likely to get a conviction and end the abuse for mm-hmm. however long a jail term we yeah. can get. So, yeah. but it takes you guys on the front line. When I said that, there was instant understanding that of what I meant.
Now, Val, from when you were a prosecutor, and maybe this is maybe a dumb question, but I'll ask it anyway. I know in law enforcement, we've come a long way with getting counseling and talking to people when we come across cases like that. How is it on your side or your former side where you're a prosecutor? I mean, you're still seeing the pictures, you're listening to testimony, you're watching this guy, this creep, this idiot that's in court. How does it work with the prosecutors? Because you can't just that stuff stays with you.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the officer side, because I was thinking before you called me, you know, what did I think were some of the top mm-hmm. 3 to 5 issues for law enforcement in 2019 mm-hmm. and beyond? And the very first one that came to my mind was officer wellness. Sure. And we can talk about that more later if you want, or we have time. But as much as it has mental health and emotional health has been neglected in law enforcement, it's starting now to get the attention it deserves. It's not even talked about in the prosecution world. I mean, I don't think there's any professional cultural recognition of it.
But why is that? Why is that? I mean, the prosecutors, I mean, yeah, they're not responding to the call. They're not on the crime scene. I get that. But you're still hearing these horrifying stories of abuse and whatever it is, whatever case it is, you're human. That affects everybody to varying degrees.
You know, you've raised a very interesting question. I'm not sure. I think prosecutors are lawyers, and I think we're viewed to be dealing with everything on a more cerebral level.
Sure.
You know, we deal with the law, and I just don't think people. I've never thought about the question you just asked.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was just wondering.
No, you don't put me on the spot. I love thinking about new things.
Yeah, because
I think we're viewed as, quote, a lawyer. Mm-hmm. We deal with legal issues, constitutional issues, search and seizure, probable cause, suppression motions, and it's all on a cerebral thing. And you're right. People don't, including our own profession, don't stop to think about, yeah, but we're still dealing with the stories and the families mm-hmm. and the victims' families, not front line like you. We're dealing with them in the aftermath.
Sure.
I mean, try telling a kid that has testified, try explaining a not guilty verdict or a hung jury, and you got to do it again. You get to do it over.
Yeah.
So both jobs have their stresses. I don't think mine compare to law enforcement officers, because I don't worry about whether I'm going to go home to my
family. Oh, I get that.
At the end
yeah.
of the shift.
I get that. I was just looking at it from, like we were just saying, as far as the, you know, you're right. I mean, there's a safety issue and thing, and I get that. But, you know, still hearing that and talking to witnesses and deposing witnesses and all that stuff, it's still got to affect people, prosecutors, on an emotional level, because you're just hearing it all the time, especially somebody like you, Val, that has been doing it for so many years. I mean, I can't imagine what you've heard or seen over the years.
I think Teddy Roosevelt talked about finding meaning in fighting the good fight mm-hmm. and being in the arena, you know, you just, and you turn to things like family, I mean, one of the reasons, one of the things I always turn to is the outdoors. I moved to Alaska from the East Coast Law School for a reason, and I love what the Last Frontier offers in terms of wilderness. I learned how to fly an airplane up there, and so I can access off the road system and fish and hunt and fly into the wilderness and kayak, you know, in the ocean with whales. And I guess that's one place for sure that I get renewal and redemption is in the outdoors.
And that is so important. I'm glad you brought that up. You've heard of Dr. Kevin Gilmartin.
Oh, I'm a huge fan.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of him. I saw him.
Emotional Survival. I have presented at other conferences and things where Kevin has been there and listened to him say the BS word.
Yeah.
More times than I can count. He's top of the peak when it comes to this.
Well, and it's so important. This is a segue into what I want to talk about a little bit now is emotional wellness, emotional survival. It is so important, I think, that law enforcement professionals out there, whatever you're doing in the criminal justice field, that you have, when you're home, you're home. You're spending time. I love how you moved up to Alaska and you found your place to kind of get away from it all and be in nature. I love it. I wish more law enforcement officers, people on the front line, would disconnect and find other things that they can connect with besides the job all the time. I know because I've been there. I was there for many years, and it's hard, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I got divorced. Is because you can't connect. But I think it's so important these days that we teach our young officers that are coming into this great profession that you have to have some other interest outside of law enforcement.
Well, I'm glad you said young officers because this emotional mental health officer wellness is a really top concern of mine. Mm-hmm. And For decades, there's been, and I'm not telling you or listeners anything they don't know, there's been a cultural, you know, tough it out, be tough, stigma in addressing it. But I preach to the leadership. Mm-hmm. They've got to make it happen for the young officers. I am an adjunct instructor at a DPS academy, mm-hmm. and a couple of years ago, walked into the academy to do my instruction and met with the LT, the commander of the academy, and he said, oh, I got something really cool to tell you. We've been able to arrange with a local physical therapist to come into the academy once a week, set up office hours, and instead of us having to transport recruits to appointments and stuff, they can just go in there. It's all confidential. They can, you know. And I said, gosh, that's yes. great,
awesome.
LT. I said, how about doing that with a mental health therapist?
Yes.
And I just got like a shocked look. And I said, what? And he said, well. I said, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. How would we arrange, you know, for confidentiality? What if they said something in the session that, you know, would make us like wonder about their employability? And I said, well, I don't understand. You have no problem with the physical therapist.
Yes.
What is the difference? And what a statement that would make to those recruits who are not yet sworn officers about the profession's attitude about mental wellness. It is just the same as physical wellness. We think it's just as important. We're going to address it with evaluations, assessments, help, support. I think beginning at the academy level, we need to be sending that message out. And I think another reason it's going to become an issue is Police One, a website that you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of 2019, they surveyed their readers and they wanted to know what are the top five things your agency needs to do better in 2019. Number two was address and provide support for officer mental and emotional wellness. Mm-hmm. That was number two.
Yeah.
And right now, law enforcement is experiencing a recruitment and retention problem.
Oh, absolutely.
We've got a healthy economy and low unemployment. Mm-hmm. And the millennials that law enforcement is competing with, they have a different attitude about mental health and emotional health mm-hmm. than previous generations. And they don't see it as a stigma, and they are going to be looking for agencies that provide support and a positive culture when it comes to dealing with mental and emotional wellness. So I think it's going to become a recruitment and a retention issue as well.
Oh, I think it is. You mentioned it. Attrition rates are through the roof. I think the one thing that leadership, and I'm formerly leadership, that we have to realize, you hit it, Val, is especially with the millennials, they want quality of life, all right? They don't live to work now, the next generation, like I, you know, was brought up, okay? They work to live, and that includes being in a positive environment for the most part. Now, it's a negative environment, criminal justice, law enforcement, I get that. But when you have a negative internal environment, which law enforcement tends to turn out to be, you know that, that just compounds the issue. So senior leadership in an organization, I agree with you 110%. We need to take notice of these changes in law enforcement. The problem is a lot of senior leadership doesn't. They look the other way.
Well, and when we talk about millennials, I'm guessing I'm significantly older than you. I'll just say I'm a baby boomer.
Well, I'll be 50.
Okay, well, I'm a older baby boomer, but and I can just tell your younger listeners, it just keeps getting better and better and better. Life just gets better and better. But because I've been training at a DPS academy before I became full-time law enforcement trainer and writer, even while I was still prosecuting, I went to the academy and trained. And so these millennials and now and the Gen X, when you ask them, why do you want to be a cop? I understand what you're saying about work-life balance. They mm-hmm. want that. But when you ask them why they want to be a cop, they say the same reasons. They've been saying the same reasons for 30 years.
True.
And it all has to do with protecting, serving, doing something that is meaningful in their life and that they think can make a difference. That's what the recruits say. I know how things change
sure.
on the job. But you mentioned, you know, what can officers do? And you would encourage them to get out, you know, unplug from the job when they have a chance to. And one saying I latched onto as a mantra for myself in terms of dealing with a job that has you so disproportionately exposed to the worst of human depravity. I co-opted a phrase from this generation of military folks, and I tell prosecutors and I tell cops, my phrase is embrace the suck.
I love it.
And I hand out black rubber wristbands, you know, motivational wristbands, which began with Lance Armstrong, live strong.
Yeah.
And I guess now he needs to add with better pharmaceuticals. But well, I shouldn't say that. You know, we all that goes in the negative column of his life ledger sheet. But in the plus column, he's raised millions and millions for cancer research. And I don't know anybody that doesn't have a plus and minus column.
Sure,
so
sure.
That's not for me to judge. But no, embrace the suck. I first encountered reading a book by an Army captain named Benjamin Tupper about his experience embedded with the Afghan National Army. And that was his platoon's motto. And as he explained it, and it's not unlike the experience of prosecutors and certainly frontline police officers. You have working conditions that suck, mm-hmm. that you can't do anything about. You can't end child abuse. You can't end sexual assault. You can't end homicide. I mean, we're all going to have job security. You can't end you can't change perhaps a criminal justice system that often doesn't do justice. You, as a cop, you can't change a prosecutor that you can't get to look at your case, or a judge, if you get it to a jury and pass the jury, reasonable doubt, unanimous verdict, and a judge gives a slap on the wrist. All so many conditions that just suck. Mm-hmm. And so then you're left with one choice. How are you going to respond? Mm-hmm. And we all know the cops and prosecutors who respond with a broken give a shitter. I'm sorry, am I allowed to say that on the podcast?
Yes, you are.
Okay. But their give a shitter breaks. And they just take up the space until they can retire.
Yeah.
That's one choice. You know, and if those people just kept their cynicism to themselves, it would be fine for the rest of us. But mm-hmm. we know they don't. They just suck all the air out of the room. And I figured out why they do that, those cynical people whose give a shitter is broke. They want to bring you down too, so that, you know, they're surrounded by other people that think like them, and then they don't need to come up with an excuse for a broken give a shitter.
Yeah.
But you can do that. You can be like that, or you can decide to embrace the suck.
Yeah.
Like the Spartans did at the Battle of Thermopylae, and find something worth fighting for, and that is where you get your meaning.
Yeah. I love it. And I think this, I love what you talk about, Val. I mean, I love all what you talk about, but you talk so much about having that winning mindset for the 21st century police officer. Is this what you're talking about? Because I think that's what it is. This is a good segue into this. Having that mindset. Okay, this sucks. I can't change it, but I'm going to do the best job I can to go forward with this case.
Yes. One of my frequently requested trainings is on leadership and a winning mindset. And I don't do anything with tactical mm-hmm. winning mindsets. I have no expertise in mats and bats, except how to avoid them. But when it comes to these other challenges, because I found that cops don't find criminals, dealing with criminals doesn't drain their spirit. That's what they signed up for. Mm-hmm. I mean, giddy up, you know, let me protect people from the bad guys. And, you know, a day where you get a bad guy off the street is, I mean, that goes in the plus column. That's not the thing that depresses them. They were mentally prepared for that, both psychologically and tactically. It's other things that drain their spirits. You know, the justice system that doesn't do justice, a prosecutor that won't take your cases, a boss that chews you out because they saw you running an errand on personal, on duty time. And then they go off to an IACP chief of police conference for 5 days, taxpayer paid, and play golf for 3 days. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the things that, you know, just kind of suck officers dry. Mm-hmm. And so, number one, I recommend, and I do at the academy, I start doing scenarios on those kinds of things. Dr. Kevin Gilmartin's emotional survival, I give him a scenario. I say, you've poured your heart and soul into a case. You did everything perfect, and you can't get a prosecutor to look at it. How is that going to make you feel? And is that going to change how you handle the next case? Or you're involved in a use of force. You do everything perfect, legally and tactically. And the bad guy's family sues you in the department, and your department settles. How is that going to make you feel? And is that going to affect how you respond and go into the next use of force incident? That, you know, and we do scenarios and we discuss it, because if they can't find meaning, I tell them, don't look to your department for meeting. Your department's a bureaucracy. If you need them to not settle the case, because it makes economic sense to settle it, in order to feel good about your legally, tactically good use of force, if you need the department, then you're going to get your heart ripped out and stomped flat. You've got to, you know, embrace the suck. Circumstances can suck, and find another meaning for doing and being in the noblest of professions, which I consider to be policing.
And I love it. But how do you get people to change that mindset, Val? I mean, because I understand that. You do. Many of the listeners do. But still, there's people out there, and you've seen them probably when you go and train and talk to people. How do you get them to see, to find that greater meaning in what they do, instead of just getting bogged down in the negative?
I mean, in a podcast of this length, I can't get all the rundown. But like I said, of the tips I give, but I hand out embrace the suck wristbands. I said, put it on, wear it, use it as a reminder. When you're around those people whose give a shitter is broke, you're not going to change them. I mean, I warn recruits, you're going to get out there and you're going to have officers that are just biding their time. All they do is complain. All they do is gripe, and you're not going to change them. So if you can't just walk away from them and get with people in your department who are positive, who are motivated, because I do travel all over the country, and the vast majority of officers I encounter are highly motivated, well-intentioned, hardworking, deeply passionate about their communities, the mission, their fellow officers. I mean, that's why I say I've been allowed to humbly walk in their shadow for 30 years. And that's who, those are the kind of officers I hang with, because, you know, the ones whose give a shitters broke, I'm not going to fix them. So I just tell them, excuse me, you're blocking my sunlight, you know? And I'm not, I don't know what, another thing about this mindset, since you're getting me to think deeper about it, the same, I get officers who say to me, when it comes to police citizen contacts, I get officers who say, well, I'll show them respect and respect them when they show me respect and respect me. And I say, excuse me, there is a huge flaw in that thinking. Can you think of what it might be? And if I throw this out to a classroom of recruits, I will get one or more hands raised, and I call on them, and they say, well, that just means you're letting the dirtbags decide what kind of cop you're going to be. Because if they're dirtbags and they don't respect you, and they curse and they spit and they don't follow rules, you're going to let those people decide what cop you're going to be.
No.
And you're going to treat them like they're treating you. And, you know, that's, we're better than that.
You decide what cop you're going to be.
That's right.
You don't let somebody else decide what, that you're taking the power from yourself and you're giving it to somebody else.
Exactly. So it's, you know, the golden rule is not do unto others as they do unto you. And when cops say, I'll respect them when they respect me, that they're saying, do unto others as they do unto you. The golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it's golden because it's so hard to do. You know, it's so hard to do. It's easy for a cop to comfort a crying 5-year-old that they just pulled out of a car in a vehicle accident. Mm-hmm. But the challenge of the noblest profession is, how are you going to treat those unwed parents that are meth heads when you go into their house and their kids are screaming and crying and neglected and dirty and hungry? How are you going to treat the two meth heads?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with you. And I think I'll take it a step further. And you know this, Val. The culture of a department has to start with the leadership. It has to start in the leadership in every organization. Now, yes, are there people that need to be in jail? They're bad people. I get that. But we need to be teaching this leadership in an organization. We need to be teaching officers what we just talked about, that you need to take the higher road. You don't let somebody dictate what kind of cop you're going to be. And that has to start with leadership, don't you think?
I do, and I have to – I'm an avid reader. Mm-hmm. I love learning. One of the reasons I was a teacher before I went to law school and had a career as a prosecutor and then I got into law enforcement training is you can't – when you teach, you can't help but learn, and I love learning. But I have to recommend a book called Unconditional Respect. And it was written by two longtime cops, Charles, he goes by Chip Huth, H-U-T-H, and Jack Cowell. And I recommend every academy should have it, every police department should have it. And it's this concept of you give unconditional respect to people, just like we've been talking, because to do otherwise lets other people dictate your character. Mm-hmm. It's not you choosing how you're going to treat people and what kind of cop you're going to be. Mm-hmm. It's letting the worst of the worst dictate what kind of cop you're going to be.
And that's why it's so important, I think, you know, when officers come from the academy, they come whatever agency they land in, that we have the right people, meaning i.e. the FTOs, the field training officers, the right people mentoring and coaching and teaching these young officers.
Well, you know, you're talking to somebody that's hung around with you guys for 30 years. And I hear the stories about the first thing my FTO said to me is, you know, everything they taught you in the
throw
academy,
it out.
Throw it out, forget about
no.
it. So, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. I've done quite a bit of training for NAFTO, the National Association of Field Training Officers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't run into field training officers like that. But another challenge for law enforcement is because of turnover, you've got FTOs that have less than 3 years experience.
Exactly.
And that's also a huge challenge. Although if I had to pick as a prosecutor and liability and thinking like a lawyer liability, if I had to pick between an FTO with 3 years experience who had a winning mindset and an FTO with 20 years experience who was negative and
shitty attitude.
Yeah, their give a shitter was broke, or worse, it was replaced by a shitty one. Give me the 3-year FTO every time.
I agree. And I wish, again, I wish more, because I think in some organizations, I speak from experience, I think it's like, oh, you know, we're in a pinch, and this person maybe not be the right person to have in an FTO role, but we're going to go ahead because of staffing or whatever issues, we're going to go ahead and let that person train. And I think that's the absolute worst you can do.
I agree.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. But hopefully, I mean, do you think things are going to get better for law enforcement? We mentioned attrition rates, you know, people shying away from law enforcement, people retiring in droves, getting out of it. A lot of that is due to unfair media coverage. I get that. But what do you think some other challenges are, Val?
Well, I'm going to answer the first question, First, she said, "Do you think things are getting better? Mm-hmm. Gonna get better?" Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I train at the academy. I go 4 times a year, and every time I leave, I am, my hope and my optimism have been totally recharged with the young people coming in, with their energy, their enthusiasm, their brightness, their openness, their dedication to service. So, you know, I have that, but as an influence, but also the current feeling amongst some more mature veteran officers about the public's perception of them, I think is very distorted because we have a 24/7 media news cycle.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
So when there are officer-involved incidents that the media finds salacious and very interesting, high profile, and you start the 24/7 loop, officers get a distorted view of the public perception of them from the media, because Pew Research did a national survey in 2016. They do it, I think, every 5 years or every 7 years, and they survey nationally about public perception about their police. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, public respect for, as surveyed by this national survey, public respect for and admiration of the police was the second highest since they've been doing this beginning in the 1960s.
Good.
It had increased double digits over just the previous one, and it increased double digits across race, gender, ethnicity, socioeconomic class, and age. Hmm. All of those groups showed double digit increases. So officers need to, and I share this with recruits, they need to understand whatever the media is filling the airwaves with 24/7, that national poll showed that officers in their communities still have the ability to make connections with and relations with their citizens. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, their citizens, they don't, it's like, oh yeah, well that happened someplace else. Oh yeah, not our officer, my officer, I admire and I respect.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think the overwhelming majority of people out there support and they love their officers. I just wish that the media was more vocal about it. You know, I mean, because officers need to hear that, especially younger officers who get on a Twitter feed or Instagram and they see the latest cop bashing incident. And I just wish it was out there more for officers and people to see, because the only thing, you know, Val, the only thing you see is the negative. And I know that's not indicative of the bigger picture. I get that. But I just wish that more media outlets would say, you know, look, it's a very difficult environment. But officers overwhelmingly everywhere, men and women, brave men and women, are doing a fantastic job.
Well, two things. Number one, I'm doing that. I wrote numerous articles to have published in my local newspaper on Police One about that 2016 poll. When I go to the academy, I show video clips from news stations.
Good.
Where they focus on positive officer behavior. And at the end of these clips, I ask the recruits, do you think if I, a non-uniformed person, had stepped out from the crowd at that run, 5K run for diabetes to help a woman finish the run, do you think I would have made national news like that police officer did? No way. It wouldn't have made national news. It made national news because it was a police officer.
Yeah.
And we're so hungry for heroes, not celebrities, heroes, that sure, when an officer involved, use of force, critical incidences, you know, get played one way, sometimes by the media, but also when there is a officer killed in the line of duty, we line the streets.
Yes.
We light our candles, we line the streets, we fill gymnasiums, we fill churches, we fill cathedrals. We take that feeling of respect and admiration, we enact it into law and public policy. You kill a police officer in the line of duty, your punishment is going to be different than if you kill me.
Yes.
And that's because we place a higher value on the life of those police officers who will willingly place themselves in harm's way.
Yeah.
So I remind officers of these kinds of things because I know just like they get disproportionately exposed to the worst of human depravity because of a 24/7 news cycle that's never ending, they get disproportionately exposed to the negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but another thing is I task police leadership. I say, you've got to balance the negative.
Yes, exactly.
You've got to be reminding them of these things, of the national poll,
yeah,
of every time they get recognized for good things. You need to be getting that media, and you need to be inviting them to come do, let's do some use of force. Hey, reporter, you want to come do some use of force scenarios? They did that in Phoenix.
Yeah.
You can find it online. And this anti-police activist who'd been marching in a protest saying, we want his badge, we want it now, was put through three deadly use of force incidents. The first one, he got shot and killed in less than 30 seconds. The last one, he shot and killed an unarmed man walking towards him with his hands open.
I remember that.
Up in the air, open. So I am telling police departments, why are you waiting until after a critical incident when they're protesting in the streets? You have citizen academies.
Exactly.
Why aren't you doing this on a regular basis?
Because we're reactive, Val. You know that.
Well, then it's time. It's time for the leadership to be proactive. If you're hiring public information officers to deal with media stuff, in my hometown of Anchorage, you know, after a deadly critical use of force incident a couple of years ago, people are marching in front of the police department. They're saying, why don't, you know, they teach cops to shoot to wound instead of to kill.
Here we go.
That's another whole podcast. I don't have to explain to your listeners how crazy that is. But instead of us saying, what, are those people stupid? No, they're not stupid. You have not explained to them.
We have an educator.
They don't know that you don't shoot to kill. That's on you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know why you don't shoot to wound. That's on you. And my hometown had a community task force that had been in existence since the 1980s of police and citizen from minority communities that met regularly. And we hadn't taken advantage of that forum to educate those people so that the next time there's a critical use of force incident and it possibly involves a minority, you've got minority community leaders standing in front of the camera saying, hey, we learned about this use of force from the Force Science Institute on our community task force, and here's why.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. We need to, we're really good at being reactive. But I think we need to, especially when it comes to use of force issues, like you just said, Val, we need to be more proactive. And what you just mentioned, it, Citizens Academy. That's what a great way to do it. What a great way to teach us.
In place. What, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Val Van Brocklin, ma'am, if people want to find you, how can they reach out to you?
Oh, I love being reached out to. My email is my name, Val Van Brocklin, and I guess that'll be on your website spelled.
It will.
So it's valvanbrocklin@gmail.com. My website, which also has contact information. Even though I'm a baby boomer, I have a smartphone that you can text. It's got my phone number on it. And my website is www.valvanbrocklin.com. And I love hearing from you folks. I love questions because they just give me more training topics and scenarios I can use. And you folks are what has given great, great meaning to my life, both personally and professionally, for 30 years. So I owe you guys a lot.
Well, Val, thank you so much for your very distinguished career as a prosecutor. You continue to give back to this great profession that's law enforcement, and we wish you much success in the future. We'd love to have you back on. I'd love to talk to you more. I could talk to you all night about other issues, and I'd love to have you back on.
Oh, I'd love to come back. I was happy that you reached out, Patrick, and thank you for what you're doing with dealing with really interesting issues and some people that make me feel awed that you've had on, some of the big name folks.
Well, you're a big name too, Val.
A big name for a small person that doesn't know she's small.
Well, much success to you, Val. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Patrick. Right, have a good bye-bye. Evening, and thank you, listeners, for your service.
Thank you, man.
Such a great show with Val. I learned so much. I was taking notes when she was talking. I hope you were too. Val, big shout out to you. Thank you for your continued work with law enforcement professionals everywhere. And for those of you who don't know, she's been featured in PoliceOne.com, Officer.com, and LawOfficer.com. Again, big shout out to you, Val. Thank you for stopping by. Stay tuned, everybody, for more great guests on the CJ Evolution podcast. And if you get a chance to rate and review my show on iTunes, I sure would appreciate it. Until next time, everybody, be safe.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.